Hi, and welcome to the Cancer Horizons podcast. Each week, we talk with patients, survivors, caregivers, advocates, or healthcare professionals and do what CURE does best, provide cancer updates, research, and education. Recent research found that survivors of childhood leukemia with Down syndrome had an increased mortality risk later in life when compared with survivors without Down syndrome or those with Down syndrome who did not ever have leukemia. In this episode of the Cancer Horizons podcast, Dr. Anna Xavier, an associate professor in the Department of Pediatrics at the University of Alabama at Birmingham Hirsing School of Medicine, provided some more insight on these findings, as well as why people with Down syndrome may be at higher risk for leukemia.
All right, so with regards to that study I sent you that kind of assessed the risks of late mortality and morbidity among survivors of childhood acute leukemia with Down syndrome, why do you think it was so important for that study to be conducted?
Well, that's a very important question to be asked. There are several reasons why the study is very important. One is Down syndrome patients, they do have a higher risk of developing leukemia than non-Down syndrome patients, mm-hmm. especially in pediatric age. And I'm pretty sure you have seen that there are several different types of leukemia. The risk of AML is much higher than a non-Down syndrome kid for especially like younger patients. As they get older, the risk of AML goes down, but they still have a higher risk of developing ALL. So over time, we tended to treat those patients in a very similar way than non-Down syndrome patients. And the mortality associated to leukemia per se was much higher, suggesting that they do have a different way of handling chemotherapy and side effects. So over time and over the past several years, those protocols to treat those patients have been adjusted to fit those patients better. They are born immunocompromised, they do have a high risk of infection, etc. But what's interesting, though, is that we didn't have data, or we still don't have enough data that we can understand how those patients do long-term. And when we say long-term, we are talking about not 5 years after completion of therapy. We're talking about decades after completion of therapy, mm-hmm. 10, 20, 30, 40 years after. You can imagine a little kid age 4 with Down syndrome. What can we tell their family what's going to happen when he or she is at 40 or 50 years of age? So we know pretty well what happens to non-Down syndrome patients getting similar therapy. We are able to track and survey and provide guidelines for surveillance of long-term side effects. But up to now, we didn't have something to tell, hey, this is applicable or not. I have some experience with survivorship in cancer, pediatric cancer, mm-hmm. and we have a significant number of Down syndrome patients that we care for. And every time I see those patients coming to clinic to discuss long-term side effects, I have to tell the family that everything I'm talking about, it has been studied in non-Down syndrome population. So to translate to a kid who has a different set of problems is difficult. So this study here is interesting because it's looking at that specific question. And I know there are others in the literature, but I think I like this one very much because of the methods that they use, trying to compare to cohort of Down syndrome patients who never got treated for leukemia or cancer. So in a way that a patient with Down syndrome long term will have bone problems or heart problems or whatever. How does that compare to kids who were treated for cancer? So I think that was the plus in that study.
So I'm going to take a step back a little bit because, full disclosure, I never knew that patients with Down syndrome had an increased risk for leukemia. Do we know why that's the case?
Sure. Wow. You should not have asked that question, okay?
Oh, darn.
No, no. This is a very well-known phenomenon, okay? And it's, so when we talk about risk of leukemia, we are talking about risk of acute leukemia, mm-hmm. okay? There are two main groups of acute leukemia. One that we call acute lymphoblastic leukemia, or ALL. The other one is acute myeloid leukemia, or AML. So ALL, we may have seen this, is the most common type of leukemia in kids. AML is the second most common type of leukemia in kids, but it's not very common. When we talk about Down syndrome babies up to the age of 4, they have a several-fold increase, I think 400-fold increased risk of developing AML mm-hmm. up to the age of 4 in comparison to non-Down syndrome patients, which is very striking.
Yeah.
ALL is several-fold increase as well and goes beyond the age of 4. So the key point there, and this is a subject of extensive research for the past so many years, and the two diseases are very different in terms of mechanism of disease. And the source of the problem is most likely related to the extra copy of chromosome 21 that those patients have. The chromosome 21 is the home for several genes that have been associated with leukogenesis or even hematopoiesis. So the extra copy of causes some sort of imbalance or genetic imbalances that ended up triggering the leukemia. So the two groups of diseases have different etiologies, I would say. For AML specifically, and this is all in theory, okay, that imbalance of genes may cause additional mutations in other genes located in other chromosomes that ended up triggering the leukemia. For AML, for example, there are like a very classic, well-known gene that those patients will have a mutation that's called GATA1 or GATA1. So a mutation in that gene causes some additional abnormalities that trigger the leukemia. So those babies are usually born with that. We can diagnose that in a good proportion of patients. Some of them will be asymptomatic, but some of them will present leukemia symptoms at diagnosis. And there's other implications related to that. Now, ALL, the mechanism of disease in Down syndrome patients, is not very clear. Mm-hmm. What we know is very different from patients with non-Down syndrome leukemia or ALL. And usually the way we know that is because the abnormalities that we see in genes that non-Down syndrome patients with leukemia have mm-hmm. are not necessarily common in Down syndrome patients. So it's another set of problems, most likely related again to the fact that they have extra copy of chromosome 21. Now, what is interesting though, and I think you're gonna, just for your information, this is interesting fact, I should mm-hmm. say, the risk of cancer in Down syndrome patients is higher only when we talk about leukemia, okay?
Mm-hmm.
So every other cancer, like breast cancer or whatever cancer you tell me, they have somewhat of a protection. So we don't see sec or other cancers as much as we see in patients without Down syndrome. So we don't see Down syndrome kids with neuroblastoma or Wilms tumor or lymphomas. It's very, very rare. I had a chance to care for a couple of patients, one with sarcoma, the other one with Hodgkin lymphoma
mm-hmm.
for the past several years, but it's not as even close to what we see in other patients. And when they grow up or to be adults, it's the same too. We don't see breast cancer as much as non-Down syndrome patients, etc. So that's another tricky part. Mm-hmm. So when we talk about cancer predisposition in Down syndrome, usually we're talking about leukemia only. And the reasons for that most likely are also related to chromosome 21, because there are some genes that are somewhat protective against development of solid tumors. So it's a very complicated thing. And this adds another issue when we talk about survivorship, because you may have seen or heard that patients who get treated with chemotherapy at a young age have a risk of developing a second cancer later on in life. When we talk about Down syndrome patients specifically, I have no clue what to tell those families. I don't know if they will be prone to develop a secondary malignancy because they have protection. So this paper here kind of suggests that they don't, and others as well. And actually, practice tells, I have never seen a secondary malignancy in a Down syndrome patient. Maybe because I haven't had to follow those patients that long, but it's an interesting situation there. So definitely papers like this one helps to clarify the question.
That's incredibly interesting, and I appreciate you explaining that to me. It was definitely insightful. So let's jump back to the paper. What do you think the findings add to the knowledge base, and how can those findings impact this specific patient population?
Okay, so I think the most important, considering the only issue, we may need to be a little careful when we discuss a paper like this one, and this, it is what it is in a way. So those are patients treated in a different country, mm-hmm. which has a different medical system. So, but in a different way, we can, because of Canada has a very different medical system than the United States, we would be able to say that at least access to care should be a little bit more similar. So we take away that component, I would say, although I'm not 100% sure because I have never practiced medicine in Canada, so I don't know the pitfalls of their medical system. That is the only thing. But what is the most important thing, and the study has several limitations, that they actually, the authors, they explain very well their limitations, which is great. But I think the most striking results of this study is the risk of death. That I was very surprised by that. The paper couldn't tell or pinpoint exactly the reasons for that. Probably is related to the methods used or even the inability to find out everything about those cohorts of patients, which is very common in studies designed like this, that they are based on data sets. So they are all based, very limited in the information we can get, which is fine too. But knowing that my patient here that I'm starting to treat today, and I do have a patient like that, mm-hmm. who's a little older, he's a 21-year-old kid who is starting to be treated with ALL today, to know and to tell this family that this kid has potentially 10-12-fold increased risk of dying in comparison to non-Down syndrome survivors. Being treated with the same disease is very concerning to me. Right. So that is one striking point. I was very surprised by those results. And even if you compare to Down syndrome controls, the increase in death is much higher too. It's not surprising that it's not as high as the non-Down syndrome survivors, because you know Down syndrome patients have other chronic conditions and that will probably cause early death. It's not very common to see an elderly person with Down syndrome, so they don't live as much as non-Down syndrome. So we know that. Mm-hmm. But to look at my patient getting ALL therapy today, that he will have 12-fold increased chance in dying earlier, and earlier is like 20 years that covers the study, is very concerning.
You give great information, so I really do appreciate it. So
no
how
problem.
do you
one of my favorite subjects. You asked me this, I was like, oh yay. I see all patients with Down syndrome here, children. And I had a chance to do some research in my as a fellow, mm-hmm. working with researchers in the Down syndrome field, and I've been participating in clinical research for those patients too. So it's a passion of mine.
And definitely an important one. So my second question that was, how do you think the findings impact this patient population, especially knowing that, you know, patients with Down syndrome and acute leukemia, especially if they survive, they might have an increased risk for late mortality.
Yeah, so that will be, well, that's going to be something important to share with families. And of course, we still don't know the reasons for that. Mm-hmm. So there will be, so that, there are other studies that don't necessarily show a similar discrepancy in mortality, but I wonder if it has to do with how these studies were designed and their own limitations. So I worry that this probably is one of the best studies that we have with this information in a pretty decent medical system. So it's kind of, to me, when I saw that paper, I was like, what, how am I going to display this information to my patients? As a physician, this is what I want to tell them. It's like, look, this is what we need to do. Mm-hmm. Now, as a researcher, we need to understand better this, correct?
Right.
So how are we going to find this out and intervene with screenings or improving their care? So when we care for survivors of pediatric cancer, so there are specific guidelines that we follow based on what kind of therapy those patients are getting, in radiation therapy, et cetera, et cetera. So for leukemia, for example, just to give you an overall view of how, for ALL, I will not, ALL is the most common type of cancer. So those patients will receive a lot of steroids. They will receive a set of drugs that we call anthracyclines. They will receive and a bunch of other medications, I would say, just to give a couple of examples. Mm-hmm. But those two examples are very important because a steroid long-term will cause osteoporosis, for example, or will have cataracts and other complications long-term. Anthracyclines will cause second malignancies, will cause heart problems. So all those things we know very well, and they are the amount, the timing, the association with radiation therapy, etc., will impact that patient. When we translate that to Down syndrome patients, I'm not so sure what happened, because I don't know fully the extension of how those drugs impact my patients. On top of this, they are born with heart problems, and they are born with other complications. So how can I translate to their family or to their patient specifically? So seeing these will help us potentially to identify, and I hope, and I know this type of work is being done, not only here at UAB, but also at a national level through a children's oncology group, trying to identify how we can adjust those guidelines to our Down syndrome survivors, because they are a significant amount of, a good proportion of patients that we'll be taking care of over the next so many years. So we want to provide that information that's relevant. It's very frustrating to tell a family that, hey, this may or may not happen because we don't have data. And I have had that situation before, multiple times, and some families will not necessarily be fully satisfied. So when we look at this, this is very scary to me, okay? Mm-hmm. Because I don't know what's happening to them. And in an institution like UAB, for example, when I can't follow those patients beyond the age of 18, so we don't discharge our patients, we have the luxury to follow those patients, we don't transfer them to adult care, at least from the oncology standpoint, I probably will be able to know more. But I wonder about other places where not necessarily the same is true. So, yeah, so those are the main points. One, knowing is scary, and what you do is important. So that would be the way I see those results.
Well, doctor, those are basically all the formal questions that I prepared. But I wanted to see if there was anything else you wanted to mention about this study or this topic before we finish up.
Well, I appreciate you taking the time to talk to me about this topic. I think this is an area medically or as a physician interested in the field, is fascinating to understand why those patients have leukemia, why is that happening, and I think they potentially understanding how this disease happened in Down syndrome will help us potentially to understand how leukemia happens in patients without Down syndrome and open up the discussion to a survivorship. This is like nobody talks about, or very few people talk about survivorship in Down syndrome patients, because truly, it was not the main focus. We would put them all together. So in the same group of, in the same bag, I would say. So I think bringing up the issue to clarify our families who are taking care of kids with Down syndrome and leukemia particularly would be very, very, is very important.
Don't forget to subscribe to the Cancer Horizons podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or other apps to hear every episode, or visit curetoday.com/podcasts. The Cancer Horizons podcast is the official podcast of Cure Magazine, the indispensable guide to every stage of the cancer experience. For more information, visit us at curetoday.com and find us on Twitter at @cure_magazine or Facebook at @curemagazine.